I would hope, lots of threads around the creativity and artistry of what's happened this morning. You'll have to make a judgment on what I do. But as I begin, I want to read to you three pieces of writing that have been significant for me at different points over the last 18 months. And as I read them, I invite you, a bit like this, just to sit quietly and listen with your head and your heart for what, if anything, in the three things I read, which speak to you, which touch you, what draws your attention, perhaps even irritates you. Just see what triggers for you. And then, if that's really useful, you might even like to spend the rest of the time thinking about that or having a good conversation with yourself and ignore the rest of what I do. Please feel free. Alternatively, you might like to occasionally tune in at least to some of what the other things I might say. But if there's stuff that's triggered for you as it's been triggered for me, feel free. So the first thing I want to read is a poem I discovered while rereading Parker Palmer's book, A Hidden Wholeness, on my way to a retreat in 2009. And I've got them on overhead, so I'd encourage you, you might like to just listen, or you might like to listen and read. Love after love, the time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror. And each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows your heart. Take down the love letters from your bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. The second reading is a poem that was used during a second Parker Palmer style retreat. And during both retreats, poetry and images were used a lot to support you in listening to your own voice. In listening in Quaker language, I understand, learning to listen to your inner teacher. So again, listen. You were made for this. One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. Soul on deck shines like gold in dark times. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, build signal fires, causes proper matter to catch fire. To display the lantern of soul in shadowy times like these, to be fierce and to show mercy to others, both are acts of immense bravery and greatest necessity. Struggling souls catch light from souls who are fully lit and willing to show it. The third reading is some prose from a wonderful book I was referred to by a close friend about 12 months ago called The Moral Imagination, The Art and Soul of Peacebuilding by a Mennonite, we're talking about Anabaptists, called John Paul Lederach. And in it he writes about an artist from Tajikistan, Middle Asia, ex-Soviet. And he says this, Akmal Mizsakharov painted the images found on the cover of this book following the tragic events unleashed in New York and Washington, D.C. on September the 11th, 2001. Its title is The Date. Tajik by birth, his studio is located in his house at the end of a street several blocks off Rudiaki Avenue, the main thoroughfare of Dushanbe. Don't know how you pronounce it. On my regular visits to Tajikistan, where I've been helping to develop a national curriculum on conflict resolution, I sought out contemporary artists and happened upon his studio. Over the course of time and visits, we became friends. In the spring of 2002, I found Akmal completing the first of his pieces on the tragedy that hit the United States in the fall of 2001. A year later, he completed the one you see here. Akmal was trained at the Surikov Moscow Art Institute, one of the best Russian academies. And near the end of his studies, he wandered from the norms of his Russian mentors, exploring roots in himself and his native Tajikistan. Speaking of his now growing internationally recognized style, he once commented, "It took some time, but I found my voice. At some point, even though it's totally uncertain, you have to take the risk of following your own intuition, your own voice." That's the bit that got me. So I hope, just enjoy those if you want. But I hope as I continue, you'll hear some resonance of those prose as I tell you a bit of a story. Because those amongst others, poems and prose, have been encouraging and provocative companions of mine over the last 2 years as I've been exploring some new directions stirring in me. So this morning, I want to tell you a little bit about that journey. For three reasons. Firstly, because, as I was reminded when Ken told us 2 weeks ago about his new opportunity, there's nothing that encourages me and I enjoy more than hearing from each other about what's going on in our lives. So I thought it was time I'd better tell you something. Not only because of that, but because, very honestly, this community, along with my professional Winding Staircase community, is absolutely foundational and enabling my journey in the world, in my faith and my work. So I kind of feel like I owe it to you. You know, sort of return on investment or something. To tell you a bit about what's going on for me, so you know more about me and maybe support me, challenge me, but also not because it's special, but as I share something about my journey that somehow touches you, enables, encourages you somehow. That's my hope. And I should preface, of course, as we all know, that sandwiching, looking back and sandwiching a 2-year story into 30 minutes is going to make it sound very straightforward, very simple, and much more comfortable than it feels from where I'm living in. So my theme is reimagining politics, reimagining leadership, a personal and shared work in progress. And you're part of it. So I'm starting the story pretty much 2 years ago, in early January 2009, when Lyndon and I are on our pretty much annual pilgrimage to Kathmandu, which most of you know about. Which is always, for me, a really, really rich time of kind of reading, reflection and leisure and catching up. But I returned that year back to Perth with a strong inner urge to be less busy doing, and a sense of wanting to carve out more substantive, generative space for myself, for writing and reading. Somehow the conviction was about committing to doing it and writing firstly and foremost for myself, for my own nurture, which sounded a bit extravagant, and without putting myself under the pressure to perform or do something for somebody else. but also somehow trusting that as I did the first, it would ultimately have some value for other people. And beyond that, nothing much was very clear, except that I somehow felt drawn to, in the writing, look back on my now, you know, reasonable number of years, but 30 years of basically working, I would say, in the field of individual and social transformation. And I was drawn to sort of look back on what has shaped and guided my thinking and practice, what's influenced how I live and how I work. Because I've been doing that for now about 30 years. I'm 57 this year. So that's the sense I came back with. And then the first half of the year happened. And I found myself having a really rich and full first 6 months, 2009. And suddenly it was June. And as I gratefully and wearily reviewed the first half of the year, I noticed that the key thing that had not happened as much as I thought I'd wanted it to was the generative space for myself. I noticed that despite saying I was committed to it, even scheduling it in my diary, it had not happened very often. Repeatedly, I had given this space away to other things and other people. So I took that realization into a series of coaching conversations with Kim, my business partner, and a good friend, Graham Taylor. And we do that for each other. And they helped me explore how come I said this and here's what's happened. What's going on here? And what surfaced over several conversations was that what was driving my outward action was what I thought was a pretty good balanced, perhaps even biblical belief, which got down to maybe crystallise it in a sentence, which was spending time with and for myself is as important as spending it with other people. And I thought that was pretty good. A bit challenging from my background. But I had to admit, I acknowledged that if that's belief at the basis of my behaviour, it hadn't worked for 6 months. So with their support, I actually surfaced and made a new commitment that was pretty uncomfortable. The new commitment was spending time with and for myself is more important than spending time with other people. And I tell you that even saying that now, given my background, and then it was really uncomfortable to even say that aloud, and stayed uncomfortable in me, in my body, for a long time. And from that point, there was a significant shift in my behaviour. Still a work in progress, it's not perfect. So having surfaced this new commitment, I also talked through with them what are the practical steps I need to put in place to actually make that happen. And the key thing, there were two things that came out of that. The first was to commit to myself and to them to setting up a new daily structure when I'm in Perth, which was to give myself extended solitary time each morning for meditation, walking, reading and writing. And to do this by most days when I'm in Perth, not having any appointments with anybody else before 11 or 12 or 1 o'clock. And since I work for myself, this is practical most of the time, not always, like I have an 8 o'clock phone call on Monday. But as the habits got stronger in me, I can see it makes a significant difference to my general well-being and to the way that my new direction is sort of unfolding. The second practical action I took was to commit and attend the Courage to Lead Parker Palmer type retreat in August 2009 that first poem came out of. And that served as a kind of symbolic and practical declaration, like a line in the sand, that I don't want the second half of the year to be like the first half. And it's helped. There was one other important thread that emerged from those coaching conversations, which links to one of the quotes. During those conversations, my business partner, Kim, reminded me of a book by Julia Cameron called The Artist's Way, which some of you may well know about. I knew about, never really read. And he made the connection. He said, you're thinking about this exploring writing. Maybe you'd find it useful to put being a writer writing in the bigger context of being an artist. And maybe there's stuff in that book that would help you explore that. And for me, it wasn't pushing that, but that rang true. So I've done that. And it's been hugely significant. So that's what started happening in the first part of the second half of 2009. No magic bullet, no magic wand, but I spent most of the second half of 2009 spending more time exploring writing for myself. Surprise, surprise, somewhat paradoxically, seems to me, as I did that, in the second half of 2009, some pictures about for what and for whom am I writing, it started to emerge. In my journal for 12th of October 2009, I find myself writing about my work and what I see happening in Australia and the world, and I write about areas of work to which I feel drawn to contribute. And I write about wanting to do something about reimagining, reinventing politics. Reimagining politics as a life-giving process for all. And that comes out of a sense of despair, almost of frustration, of looking at how both at the Australian level and above, the combative, short-term, negative political paradigm stops serious conversations and serious decision-making that I think we need to make if we're going to have a future. I could elaborate on that, I won't. So soon after, in my journal of the 26th of October, I find the first rough version of what becomes an invitation document around this reimagining politics idea that I want to get involved in, that I send to a few people, including those connected to the political process, and in the second half of 2009, have some exploratory conversations about this, what's emerging for me. So that's what. So the second half of 2009, I'm mainly spending time on myself. And I begin to read stuff that seems relevant to the theme. And I start talking to both people close to me in the winding staircase who understand me and know me, and people a bit scarier, a bit further out, who are somehow connected to the political process, and see what they think. What I'm blown away by, encouraged by, is everybody I talked to, and there was probably about 10, somewhere between 10 and 15 people I spoke to, immediately engage with the significance and importance and the difficulty of doing something. And everybody takes my interest seriously. No one treats me like an idiot. So I was encouraged by that. So that's where I get to by the end of 2009. On myself and this reimagining politics thing. Excuse me. So that's what I want to do now is fast forward to today and give you a bit of a feel for what's happened since the end of 2009. So another year. Because that's the start. And I want to talk a bit about what's emerging for me and this work. And I want to talk a little bit about the how of it, the who of it, and the what of it. And the how's fairly easy to repeat. The how of it feels as simple and as difficult as when I'm in Perth holding and strengthening that discipline, that daily structure of not giving time to other things until I've spent time writing and reading and nurturing myself. I can tell more about it. Feels as simple and difficult as that. Out of that, seems like everything else starts to emerge. So what happens about my writing? My emerging writing. Over this period, what I find is, as I give that time, I find my, I really pick up on an idea from this book, who says if you're going to be an artist, you need to cultivate and live the artist life, which includes solitude and hanging around with artists. And I've been pretty dismissive, as you'll find out, of artists in the past. And she talks about the discipline of the artist page, so that every day you sit down with a blank page and you write. And I started doing it. I've always journaled, but this became much more generative, much more creative, and much more prolific and consistent. And out of that journaling, in the last 12, 18 months, have emerged 18 pieces of writing, which is a mixture of poetry and prose, and I'm going to finish, I hope, with a poem I've written. Ranging from short poems to a 12-page document, mostly they explore my personal inner human leadership journey. And then about three or four of them are beginning to talk about the work I want to do in the world. I want to do what I'm already doing. Like, there's a piece I've written about my involvement in World Vision, which I've used with my colleagues. And then the other surprising thing for me is I've become seriously interested and actively exploring the craft of being a writer for its own sake. A bit scary for me. And one immediate outcome is that in the next 3 to 4 months, I am going to be experimenting with an online blog. That's a big shift for me. And for me, they're both exciting and pretty scary. And pretty scary to be telling you about. And this is a natural segue to where you might think I'm totally cracked, which is a story that I hope will illustrate the sort of inner and outer shift that this is causing for me. In May last year, I wrote a piece called The Artist, The Monk, The Provider and The Activist. And it's a conversation between different parts of me. That's the crazy bit, but useful bit. It's a conversation for forgiveness, acknowledgement, and reconciliation. In it, and some of you were around in some of this, the activist acknowledges how, as a young, idealistic, and self-righteous student in a hurry to save the world, he decided there was no place for the artist, at the time an aspiring musician, and cut artists from his life. Activist was aided and abetted in this by the monk, who at the time was a somewhat, you'll be surprised to know, intense and over-serious about his spiritual development. During this conversation with myself, activist realises artist has in fact been present all along, often a bit hidden, but has never felt welcomed and acknowledged. Activist recognises now his deep need at this point in his life for the special and unique leadership that only the artist child has to offer. This is an unsettling and rich and ongoing conversation. So at this point, where I'm at now is the artist, now actively supported by the monk, actively renegotiating their relationship with the provider and the activist, and are being mostly welcomed by them. It's a time where the artist is being asked to take the lead in unlocking the shared leadership of the whole. I need and want all these characters in my life the leadership of each of them has the potential for light and shadow, which is what Parker says. Historically in my life, and I think reinforced in the society I grew up in, the activist, the doing, the being busy, the achieving, the proving myself, the wanting to save the world, and the provider, the need to earn a living, have been strong in shaping who I am and how I experience life. As a result, I would say, along with their leadership gifts, their shadow side, which I experience as fear and anxiety, are long-standing and familiar companions of mine. Also, because the activist and provider have been so strong in me, the monk, the part of me that longs for solitude and reflection, while strong in me since childhood, and I know that, has always struggled to feel valid and valued. Monk is helped greatly by the emergence of the artist. Doesn't take himself so seriously. As described previously, until the recent conversation, the artist has been largely unacknowledged, even dismissed by the other three, as a bit too frivolous, indulgent, immature to be taken seriously. But that's changed. So what you might say has that got to do, that inner journey got to do with the work of reimagining politics? And I would reframe the question as, how is my shifting sense of relationship between the activist and the artist shaping my thinking about my new work of reimagining politics? And the answer is significantly, and I want to illustrate that and tell you a bit more about what that work is. Back at the end of 2009, this is how I was describing how I saw the work of reimagining politics. What I was talking to people about, here's what I'm wondering, is this useful? And had these two key elements in that I still think are important. It's first of all the inner work of creating individual and collective reflection space for those in the political system. I think most people go into it with the best of intentions. They just get sucked up in the system. So I want to provide space to support them to stay in touch with who they really are. That's the first bit. And then the second bit is, I don't have the answers about shifting the paradigm. I've got some thoughts, but I do know how to create different conversation spaces in large and small group processes where people can actually deeply talk about how might we do it, what do we really care about, and what might it look like if we did it. So that's how I described it. And you can read that 12 months ago. As I've been exploring more the artist-writer space, two more, but particularly one, have emerged for me. Discovering and telling appreciative stories of those involved in political and public life. And along the way, working out how to get paid for it. So I can't do it much if I don't get paid for it. The key for this here is, looking at this today, for me, those four elements are still possibly really important and really useful. Looking at it from here, I see that the first and the second are the primary passion and interest of the activist. Yeah? Making things happen in the world, which has been my identity for 30 years, my primary guiding identity for 30 years. I see the third as the primary passion of the writer-artist. And the fourth, of course, is the primary and absolutely necessary passion of the provider. Sorry? The fourth is along the way. All right. Along the way, working out how to get paid to do the work I most want to do. I can't be the irresponsible artist. I've got to be somehow a responsible artist. But I want to be it. It's as though as I do my inner work, as I loosen my strong and long-held identity as the activist, not completely, but loosen it, I find myself listening increasingly to the relatively unacknowledged leadership of the artist-writer. As I do this, my view of myself and my work in the outer world is shifting. At this point in time, while I want to see all those elements develop, personally, and this is quite unexpected, I am most powerfully drawn to start with the collecting and telling of stories of those called to and involved in different parts of the public political life. And that's where I am starting, and the whole. So finally, well, second finally, let me tell you, give you a bit of a feel for practically what is that looking like. So practically, what have I been doing and what am I going to do next? There is no grand plan, is the first thing. But I do sense a shift from last year to this year, from mainly a process of gathering in myself and preparing myself somehow, not completely, into more work out there. So, starting just before Christmas, and as recently as last Friday, I've had rich conversations with three politicians, with whom I have a range of natural connections. I won't bore you with those. The first was Ben Wyatt, Aboriginal State Labor parliamentarian, touted to be a future leader of the State Party, but a bit dented, as you will have seen. His cousin, Ken Wyatt, this is Friday, who's the new Liberal member for Hasluck and the first Aboriginal member of the House of Reps. And you will have heard of those. And Wendy Duncan, a National Upper House member of State Parliament. Wendy, I went to uni with and rediscovered her on the TV. You went to school with her. Rediscovered her on the TV at the 2008 election, where she's standing behind on the TV when they announce the deal between the Nationals and the Liberals. Taking us this long to get together. But she, up until the 2008 election, she was the president of the WA Nationals. And she's been in the thick of the kind of rejuvenation with Brendan Grylls of what's going on with the Nationals. All three of them gave me time and were genuinely interested and engaged in the conversation, sufficient to say, we want to meet again to talk further. Which will start happening after I get back from Solomon's. So that's one territory. A couple of weeks ago, I also had an initial conversation with our ex-front door neighbours, who are both really experienced journalists, about what might need to happen. Well, started the conversation, and they want to have another one, about, well, what needs to happen in the media if politics is to shift? And maybe they could be useful to me in the telling of the stories and getting the stories out there. Don't know where it will go, we'll see. When I get back, late February, March, I'll be convening a meeting of a number of my Winding Staircase colleagues, including Michael Wood, who have expressed real interest in being involved in this. And we'll sit down and really say, well, what are we going to do this year about this? Who wants to do what? I've mentioned that I'm going to start blogging. That's a piece of this. And finally, there's other things I could say. And finally, last September, along with Michael Wood and two other of my colleagues, we piloted a two-day courageous leadership retreat, a la Parker Palmer type stuff, to which 20 people came along. And we, because of that's gone well, we will be running more of those, four more of those this year, and we're looking at different niche markets. And for me, that's the starting of this work, because that's one example of the kind of reflective space that I want to be offering people in the political arena. So that's where I'm up to. I'm going to finish. Actually, Tyson, can you help us? So I hope that... Can you change it over when we get to it? To round it off, I'm just going to finish with something I wrote for myself a little while ago, which kind of tries to put in the words what's going on for me, and maybe it'll be useful to you. So sit and listen, see what happens. Then abandon yourself. Abandon yourself. Lose yourself to find yourself. Let go. Die to self. Be born again. Become a child. Begin again. I've been learning to do this all my life. I know it works. It can be trusted. I have witnessed this repeatedly in my life. And yet, after all this time, once again, it feels difficult to let go, to again become a child in a new endeavour. Even as one part of me knows it works, will bring joy and contribution, it remains uncomfortable to let go of the stories I hold and tell about myself, my joys and struggles, gifts and shadows, the roles through which I know myself and am known, seen and recognised by others. It remains uncomfortable to step again into unknown waters. And here the hook to draw me forward greets and surprises me. Unknown waters. This catches the artist's child. That sounds intriguing. As the child holds this view, the attention shifts to journey, the exploration, the discovery. Now I wonder what's possible if the old habitual fears. Who are you to think you could do this? What will others think of me? What if I fail? You'll never make a living out of this. Dissolve. Curiosity, wonder, trust draw me forward, clarify the mind. The next steps emerge. As I let go the certainties of constructed self, let these shattered fragments fall, I trust that something new, wondrous, and unforeseeable is emerging. Something more richly and fully myself than I could imagine, waiting to be surprised by joy. This then is the witness of your life. When familiar fears, doubts arise, acknowledge, but don't indulge them. Bear witness to the testimony of your life and take the next step. The end.